Most business podcasts today focus on the 1%, the nationally known larger-than-life personalities, entrepreneurs, and celebrities with interesting business stories. Business Exit Stories shares the stories of the other 99% of unheralded entrepreneurs that own successful companies in manufacturing, retail, logistics, telecommunications, construction, food service, and in every imaginable type of business in every state and city around the country. These are the stories told by the deal makers that facilitate exits. These are the mergers and acquisition specialists, business brokerages, financial and wealth planners, CPAs, appraisers, and attorneys. By listening to their stories, you'll learn what the entrepreneurs and business owners they represent did right and what they did wrong when it comes to exiting their business through a sale or a merger. In fact, you'll not only learn how they avoided disastrous exits, but how they positioned their companies for an out-of-the-ballpark home run when they exited their business. And here's your host, Marvin L. Storm.
Today we have as our guest Carol Grisham. Carol is from Northwest Arkansas, near the home office of Walmart. Today on the podcast, Carol shares a story of a transaction involving a flooring business with a 25-year operating history and had a well-known brand in the area. This area was in the part of the country that was exploding in growth, largely because Walmart was nearby. However, this deal didn't make it to closing. Learn how the owner of the business lost his focus after he had purchased the business and had allowed the business to just languish for years. And after the deal was in escrow, he let it slip away. The big takeaway here is on what not to do when selling a business and having it in escrow. Carol then shares a story about a transaction that involved real estate. In this story, you'll learn how having control over the real estate in a deal can end up being a really important factor when selling a business. This is Marvin L. Storm with the Business Exit Stories podcast. Today, we're here with Carol Grisham. Carol, would you introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your company?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I am Carol Grisham. I live in Northwest Arkansas and work for a company called CBI Team, which stands for Confidential Business Intermediaries. We've been in business for over 25 years and have sold over 750 businesses right now through Arkansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and some parts beyond. But it's a great company to work for. We have a process in place that very clearly helps sellers as they are getting ready to sell, as they are going through the process, understand the steps involved in getting the best value and having hopefully a very positive experience in working through the sales process.
Well, great, Carol. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about some of those transactions, and perhaps you could share a specific transaction that you've dealt with recently that had a challenging, maybe a little less than ideal outcome to the business sale.
Okay. You know, we never like to think of something, Marvin, in a negative way, but that does happen. And I worked with a gentleman a few years ago that had contacted me and said, I'm ready to sell my business.
What type of business was it?
It was a floor covering carpet business. And he had been in business for probably at least 5 years, I would say.
So had he purchased the business from somebody else prior to getting into the business?
Yes, he had purchased. He had purchased it from someone that had owned it for over 15 years. It was a very solid business, very well known. And he bought it because he thought that he was ready to go into business for himself and start making more money.
Do you recall, did he come out of the corporate world or was he in a similar business before he purchased his carpet flooring business?
No, he was not. He did come out of the corporate world. Here in Northwest Arkansas, we call it vendor world because we are surrounded by a lot of vendor offices since we are home to Walmart corporate headquarters. And he came out of the vendor world and just knew that he was ready to make a major change in his life.
So to get a little context here, he had worked in corporate America and he was ready to make a change in his life. And so he looked around and this business was appealing to him. So he acquired the business, mm-hmm. anticipated growing it, and probably wanted to become an entrepreneur and got started with that dream in mind.
Correct. He did. And he had, I'm sure, I did not know him at the time, but I think he had great intentions and a lot of contacts and was buying a very reputable, profitable, and growing business. And the first year or two that he had it, I think it continued in its success. During our first visit, we had a great Q&A time just to learn more about how he had acquired it and how it had gone, and then what was his reason really for selling. And then really, we also asked the question, have you ever worked with a business broker before? And he told me, yes, he had, that he had worked with another broker in town, but really wasn't pleased with the work and said, I just probably should have come to you all first. But his reason for selling was that he was wanting to go into business with another family member. And we accept everything definitely at face value. So we said, okay, you know, we can work with you and help you. So we got his tax returns and all of the information that we require. His income numbers looked very consistent. He had several employees. But really unknown to us, there were, in my mind, business walls were crumbling in the background.
But this was not obvious when he first came and sat down and talked to you. And the reasons he gave made sense at the time. And you didn't have any knowledge at this time that things were not going all that well behind the curtain, so to speak.
Right. We did not. Because it's, you know, that takes a little bit of time and analyzing and looking at it. So we did not really realize what was taking place.
So when someone says to you that they have worked with another broker before, what kind of red lights or flags does that set off in your mind based on your experience?
It lets us know that they have been wanting to sell for a lot longer than just thinking they're ready to sell. They do understand the process usually in selling a business a little bit more than if they had not worked with someone before. But it does raise flags wondering, why did it not sell before?
Did you have that discussion at all?
We did talk about that. And we asked them because there was no sign of it in their financial information at that time. It was consistent. It was steady. So we really couldn't pick up on that. But there were certain things, I think, behind the scenes that we were not told. And we did not realize that until we started getting in it and analyzing what was really going on.
So from the financial statements and tax returns that were provided, the business looked healthy, at least from a historical point of view, and you were able to decide that you would accept the listing at that point in time and move forward on trying to market the business.
Definitely. Yes. We did. It looked solid. We knew that it was a very sellable business. It had historical trends that were strong, and we were ready to go and market it, which we did. We did start marketing it. And I can tell you, we had several interested parties that came to us, and we call them buyer-seller meetings. And those went very well, but there was not the enthusiasm or the how could you make this business grow coming from the seller. Where there was something that we couldn't pinpoint, but we knew it just wasn't right. So we started asking for updated profit and loss statements each month, so we could track what was maybe going on, because we were starting, after a few months, we were starting to see a trend where the numbers started dropping. The bottom line number started dropping. Credit card debt started rising. And we realized that he was living out of the business, having a lot of his own personal expenses being run through the business more than had been shown in previous years. And marketing dollars started dropping off. They were not spending as much money in marketing And there were just some changes that were starting to take place on a monthly basis.
So in your experience, Carol, when someone is selling a business and you see marketing start to drop off, that's generally not a good sign, is it?
Not at all. You know then that they're either not making enough money to pay for the marketing, or they don't feel a need to market because they are thinking, oh, I'm going to sell, so why do I need to worry about getting other customers because I'll be selling soon? They don't see the full picture sometimes of you maintain your business as if you were going to keep it for the next 5 to 10 years. You want to sell a growing, consistent, profitable business, not one that has a downward trend each month.
So from what you're saying here is that the financial statements really, from a historical point of view, showed a growing, expanding, thriving business. But as the current financials were updated, a different picture started to emerge.
It did. And we also found out that there were a couple of employees that had been asked to leave. We thought it was because of, you know, just an employee issue, and they were trying to then hire someone else, but they never did hire someone else to take the place of those two employees. And a part-time person was hired. But then in walking through the building, as we looked at the shop, the overall appearance of the shop had started going down as well. So as we continued to update the P&L numbers at the end of really the second quarter, we just became more concerned that maybe the seller was not working in the business on a regular basis, as he had previously told us, and the manager was trying to run the operation. So when we learned that some marketing items had been removed by vendors that were helping promote their flooring products, we sat down and just had a heart-to-heart talk with the seller more than once to really try and determine what was going on, because we knew this business had made it, had been successful, and what was happening.
When you're really talking about a business like this that has such a strong historical point of view, and you mentioned that the vendor started removing marketing support, that really means that the push through of their products is not there. And generally sales drives marketing contribution, and those marketing contributions, because they weren't selling through that product, weren't there.
Correct. And inventory was not being moved. There was a substantial amount of inventory in place, and it was just sitting there. And that was very evident when you walked in and saw what was in all the storerooms. So if you fast forward a few more months, the business ended up with really only one employee. The owner was not there very often, and it became pretty clear that the business was then only worth really what the equipment and the FF&E that they had in the shop and part of the inventory.
So define for our audience what FF&E is.
FF&E is furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And that is what a bank will loan on. Many times when you sell, they'll loan on a certain percentage of the FF&E. And so we thought, well, we kept working at it because we had people still interested, and we were very honest with the buyers coming in, what we felt was, you know, going on. So we got down to where we had one offer that was just for the FF&E and the inventory. They could not reach an agreement on price for the inventory. And the seller said, no, it is worth more than that, and I'm not even going to consider that offer. And we finally had to say, we're sorry, we cannot help you any further. And so we had to walk away from it. And then about a month or so later, we found out that the seller was going to be closing because they were going to lose their lease because they had not been able to pay for the lease. And I understand that they ended up just putting the equipment in storage where they could turn around and hopefully sell the equipment for pennies on the dollar, which they did a couple of months later.
Well, that is a sad ending to what should have been a successful sale. In this type of situation, based on your experience, Carol, when you have 20, 25 years, a great reputation in the area, and from what I know of your part of the world, it is a growing and expanding part of the country, and there's a lot of economic activity and people moving into the area, and this being in the flooring business, when you have expansion in the housing market and an employment base, that bodes well for a business like this. And so from all indications, there should have been a very successful outcome to a sale of a business with this much track record and the potential in the area. What do you suspect was really the reason that the seller couldn't get engaged in the sales process or wasn't really committed to the business? Because from what you're telling me, there was at one point in time when he bought the business, he was probably pretty jazzed about the business, was excited to get into business and be his own boss and be entrepreneurial and control his own future and probably increase his income substantially. But that really didn't happen. Why do you think that was?
I think sometimes you can walk into a business that is thriving and very successful, and it will hold its own for a while because it's based upon past history. But if you are trying to buy a business, I think there are certain things you need to understand, that the business is going to require probably more time than you anticipate. It may require more money or a bigger line of credit than you would think because of unexpected expenses and needs, cash flow that come up. And I think this individual was just not prepared for, quote, real life of being a independent business owner and running a company 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, every week.
Well, I've, in my world, in my prior history and running and working with people that have run businesses, I think it's a common misconception from folks that come out of the corporate environment. I have a very structured environment, have a lot of support systems. They may have managed dozens, if not hundreds of people, controlled large budgets, but behind the scenes, there's a huge support organization making all that possible. And when they step into the entrepreneurial world of a small business that's doing $1 million, $2, $3 million a year in business, the business can't support huge infrastructure of employees that are 2 or 3 levels deep. And they end up wearing a lot of different hats. And that can be very taxing. And for a lot of people who are more employee-oriented versus entrepreneurial-oriented, that turns out to be a real challenge. And if I had to guess, I would say that there was at least some of that component going on in this type of situation.
I think you're right. And I think that when you think about buying a business, and we do, especially now, talk to new buyers about why they are wanting to buy and give them additional tools for, as they go in and grow into their business, how they can have support from several different resources to make sure they're on track and that they maintain that energy and enthusiasm in years 2 and 3, as well as when they first buy it.
You know, I really like football and other sports, and a lot of coaches or teams or players get a bad rap for not being able to close out a game. They're leading the entire game, but when it comes crunch time and they got to maintain that lead and keep up the pace, they falter and stumble before they get across the goal line.
Right.
And it sounds like in this situation, one of the big takeaways is that he had a great business, and if he would have kept committed both in his time and in his marketing efforts and continued to grow the business, you had willing buyers there and they were willing to enter into discussions, he would have probably been able to execute a successful sale. Wouldn't you say that would have been the case?
He could have made it to that goal line, definitely. But I think it was just losing the enthusiasm and the energy and didn't have someone to help carry that ball.
Well, I think if you put yourself on the other side of the table as a buyer and the seller doesn't have enthusiasm for the business and sales are dropping, a lot of question marks, a lot of red flags, and a lot of caution that they will take to keep their enthusiasm up. It takes a very sophisticated buyer to see through what the opportunities are in that type of situation. And there are opportunities.
Definitely.
For those type of situations, if you can see through everything and see what the real value of business is, and that the thing that's holding back the business may in fact be the owner of the business at the time.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right.
Well, Carol, perhaps we have a story here you can share with us that had a little bit better outcome than this.
You know, I do. Most of the time, we have very successful stories and businesses that are just amazing, and they go on to really shine and grow. And even we have people that buy a business from us and then come back 5 or 10 years later to sell their business again. And that's sort of like, I guess, seeing the kids grow up and come back home, because it is fun. But a couple of years ago, I guess it was, I listed a daycare business that had been in business for about 10 years. They had a trusted staff in place and parents followed them, so much so that they really didn't even have to keep a waiting list. But the owner came to us and said, we need to move out of state. And so we need to prepare our business, get it positioned, get it ready to be sold, because we know that this is going to happen in the next year or two, and we don't want to do anything in haste. We want to make sure that we're very methodical about this. And, you know, I think a lot of times as business owners, you think, okay, we're ready to sell, but you really never think through, but are we really? We may be ready emotionally, but not from a business valuation point. So what comes first? I believe, and I know that from owning my own business, that getting ready to sell your business requires many steps in order to obtain the best possible sales price, as well as minimal stress as you continue to operate your company on a day-to-day basis. And if you don't have a strong support team running in the background, including, I would say, a team like ours, CBI team, that is working with you and helping guide you through the sales process, it's not going to work, because you have to maintain operations. You have to pull together all the information necessary in a timely manner. And this can be difficult, as well as stressful.
So in this case, though, you had the seller of the business coming to you a year or two in advance, really talking about getting their business ready to sell.
Yes. That is the best scenario.
In your experience, how often does that happen?
Oh, I would say 20 to 25% of the time.
So a great majority of the time, people are showing up, like the previous story, saying, I'm ready. I need to sell my business now.
They do. But a lot of times when we contact, we work with a lot of buyers that we know on down the road will want to sell. And that is even really a part of our internal process, where we work with people and just stay in touch with them 3 months, 6 months, up to sometimes 2 years. I mean, I've been working with some people for 2 or 3 years and they have said, yes, I know I want to sell. I know the information you are going to need, but I want to get the business to a certain point before I'm ready to sell, so I can get the highest, best value.
So in this case, where they're thinking of moving out of state and they're getting ready to get the business ready for sale, how did that process sort of evolve?
Well, as we talked to them, they already knew a lot of the information that we would need. It took them a couple of weeks, but they gathered their furniture, fixture, and equipment list and the values associated with all of that. And then they gave an estimated value of just average inventory, because we know when we're analyzing a business and we're plugging in numbers that a bank will lend a certain percentage based on your FF&E value as well as your inventory. So we also gathered the last 3 year tax returns, their current P&L, and a balance sheet, and then we started our valuation. And that took a little bit of time, but through the valuation, as we were analyzing their rental rates, we started talking about, okay, who is your landlord, and would your lease be assumable, or would it stay the same rental rate? And we found out that the landlord was an out-of-state entity that they had leased the space from, and that this group was also interested in selling the real estate. So the price of the real estate was definitely, if you had the same buyer or if you had two different buyers, was going to be a pivotal point that was going to have to be worked through, because you have the price for the business and then the price for the real estate. And our hope is that we could find a buyer that would want to buy both, because when you have two different owners, it can really impact the sale of the business.
So just to make sure that we're clear here, we have the daycare center that is being listed for sale and being prepared to sell. And now it surfaces that the landlord, who is out of state entity, also wants to sell the business. You have two sellers and you may have two buyers. And so you have four different entities you're trying to work with at that point in time. So what you would like to have seen happen in an ideal world is to find one buyer for both the real estate and the daycare center.
That's exactly right. And we did talk with several different buyers for each part of that. But luckily, after a few months, we had a buyer that stepped up and said, I'm interested in both. Because of the growth that is going on in Northwest Arkansas, I see the potential for owning the real estate as well as this thriving daycare business. And so this buyer started analyzing it a little bit differently because they knew they could adjust the rental rate to fit whatever their needs were if they owned the business. Whereas if you had it the other way, of course, there would not be that much flexibility and could impact in a negative way the cash flow.
Well, one thing that as you're explaining this to me, it would seem that if you really did have two buyers for the business, was the real estate price really negotiable or was it pretty fixed?
The price was not negotiable.
So if you had a situation where the price on the real estate is not negotiable, that means in theory anyway, if there is any negotiation on the price, it was going to have to come out of the seller of the business, and that would not make them happy campers if that were the situation.
It did not. That was the situation that came up. And so we worked on both sides, and we were able, though, to adjust the rental rate since it was going to be a buyer for both. And then by doing that and working with the numbers and working with the seller of the daycare, we were able to get to a very agreed upon price that was not far off from being full price on both. But the seller of the daycare did have to come down a little bit.
But it was within their tolerance.
It was within their tolerance. And they knew that they were going to be moving out of state, and they needed to go ahead and do this. But they were happy because they were happy with who the buyer was going to be, and they knew that their business would be very successful in this situation that had come about.
In this situation where you have two buyers or two sellers in this situation, what was the sequence? Because if the real estate closed and was successful, then the business, they may not have agreed, and you would now have a situation where you have a new owner to the real estate, but the business hasn't sold. So how did the buyer of the business evaluate that? Were there any criteria that he put in on the type of terms that he was willing to accept as the deals were negotiated?
The buyer of the business was very savvy, and they made it very clear that they wanted to close on the real estate before they closed on the business, because they knew that if it went the other way and the seller of the building happened to change their mind or not sell, then they might be stuck with a business that would have a much higher lease that would impact their bottom line. So the buyer said, I want to close on the real estate first. And then if anything happens at the end with the sale of the business and something where we just, you know, they decide not to sell or just something happens, you know, it's never closed until it's closed, then at least I will own the real estate and have a solid investment from that standpoint.
So we have a situation here where it worked out well.
It did.
Both buyer and seller, and now we have a new owner that owns and controls both the real estate as well as the business. And so from a strategic point of view, when that new owner, 5, 10, 15 years down the road, gets ready to position that business for sale, he's in a much different situation than an owner of a business that does not control the real estate.
Very much so. It turned out great, and you're right. It is much more solid when they decide that they are ready to sell, then they are in control of all aspects of it and probably will not have it divided out. They will sell it as one, just one sale.
And in this case, I assume that the real estate was in a prime location and they didn't want to move. I mean, they in fact could have moved, I guess, if the real estate had not been a part of the transaction and they needed to move, they could have moved, but it was probably a real estate in a prime location. That would be my assumption.
It is. It was. It was in a key location, high traffic count. And they knew that with all the growth going on in our area, that it was only going to continue to rise in value. And it would have been very difficult to move the business to a different location.
Well, Carol, these are two fascinating stories. We really appreciate you taking the time to share this with us. If someone wanted to reach out to you and contact you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
The best way to contact me is cbiteam.com. And I'm also on linkedin.com, which is always linkedin.com/in/Carol Gresham.
Well, Carol, thanks for sharing your stories. And until next time, we'll see you on another episode of Business Exit Stories.
Thanks, Marvin. I appreciate it.
Join us on our next episode when our guests will share more stories of how entrepreneurs, founders, and business owners have exited their businesses and learn about what to avoid and what you need to do to successfully position your business for a successful exit. If you enjoyed this podcast, take a minute to give us a rating on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts so aspiring entrepreneurs everywhere can find us. If you wish to reach out to any of our guests, please visit our website at www.businessexitstories.com, where you can find more information. Join us next time for more Business Exit Stories.